Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. I just now realized I was on mute. You know, and that explains a couple of things. That explains, one, why before the show I was calling out to both of my co-hosts and getting nothing. Now I know why. My bad, guys. Oh, boy. Lollygagging around the infield, episode 240. Can you guys hear me now? Irby, can you hear me? We good?
Yes. I definitely can. You know, you brought this on yourself, and I 238 times I have completely agreed with your song choice at the beginning. But, Bo, it is May 4th, and you did not intro with Star Wars. So, the dark side.
See, I did that for a Now, wait a minute. I did that for our listeners who have been absolutely pummeled with between the it's about to be May Justin Timberlake meme and the May the 4th Star Wars meme. I'm looking out for our listeners on this one. I think they've had enough. I know I have.
Yeah, I haven't had enough. I haven't had enough. It's Star Wars Day is a wonderful day. And I will die on that hill.
Samantha, you going to help him out with that hill? He appears ready to die on it, and I'm not going to reach a hand out.
No, like, Star Wars is fine, but, like, I'm not, like, I can't get into, like, Star Wars culture. Like, it's a movie. It's good. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, Samantha, before we get into your three things, I got to ask you, did you see the Mad Bomb ejection earlier today? Did you see this?
I did not. I thought you were going for the Max Scherzer ejection yesterday. That's where I thought you were going.
That was also good.
Which is excellent.
That was fantastic. You know, he's not even pitching at all in the series and gets tossed from the dugout. No. Apparently, in between innings, they wanted to take a look at his hand because, you know, this is what umpires do now. They police to make sure they don't have any sticky stuff on their fingers. And Mad Bomb, basically, he just decided that that was going to be a moment where he was letting the umpire know about some errors that he had made behind the plate and gets caught right after. But the funniest part about it is the meme that's circulating now, because it's definitely along the lines of, like, you know, like that trend of, you know, find yourself somebody that looks at you the way that such and such looks at such and such. That's what this is going to be, because they catch a still of the umpire and the look he's giving at him while he's holding his hand.
Aw, that's cute. That's cute. But I love sticky stuff ejections. Like, I mean, we've had so many good ones. Like, I mean, I don't think he got ejected for this. Remember when Max threatened to take his pants off on the field? Or when Lance Lynn felt at the umpire? Tremendously good stuff.
Oh, boy. And we are off to the races. Obi, how about you? Did you see that ejection earlier today? One of those
I did. Yes, I did. I don't know. It's unfortunate. It seems like the ump was, I don't know exactly what's being said. I have lip readers if they can jump in on and help us out with this, but it seems as though the ump might have been looking to, he's almost cat, you know, prodding the cat on here. Like he's seeing if he can get a reaction. He gets the reaction so he can eject him, but that's
right, yeah. Yeah, I think that was another thing about it, too, that I like, Samantha. Like, it was very Bull Durham-esque. Like there wasn't a lot of theatrics, you know. You're obviously mad, but he was pretty mad. You could tell he was mad, but, like, he wasn't in the umpire's face. It was very much almost like a conversation. He must have said one of those words he's not supposed to say. I got tossed.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. You can get tossed for anything now, so can't argue balls and strikes. So that's probably what did it.
not even if you're Max Scherzer being a walking ad for Mets merch in the dugout. I mean, head to toe Mets gear, everything down to the hat with Mets gear. So, all right. Well, let's get into this. We've got a lot to cover here. So, Samantha, you want to kick us off with the three things that you saw over the last handful of days?
Sure. So we talk about the Yankees pitching, which has been better, a lot better than we expected. The Yankees look a lot better than we expected, and certainly I think the pitching does. You know, Gary's found his footing. I think he's figured out, you know, some of these sticky stuff guys, there are a few people who I think are just kind of done. Without the ability. Plus, everybody's still using it. You know, we see all these guys touching their hair, touching the back of their uniform. I mean, there was a whole thing with Gary. And, yes, I know his real name is Garrett. Don't come to me. But, you know, Gary kept, I mean, this was endlessly amusing to my children when the announcers were like, he keeps touching his butt. He's touching his butt. And there was, like, something on the back of his uniform pants. So now we have three children running around saying things like, he's touching his butt. You have stuff on your butt. There's stuff on your butt. So that's been great. you know,
that's what kids are supposed to.
Whether he's – yeah, it's their job. And they watch too much baseball. And they love the word butt because what small child doesn't? But
absolutely.
So one way or the other, you know, Cole seems to have found his footing. I think some of the better pitchers, whether they were using sticky stuff or not, you know, if you can command, you can kind of find a way around it. You know, me and Shane Bieber, all these guys who sort of lost RPMs off their spin rate, have figured out another way to kind of get guys out, and they've been fine. You know, and then, of course, Montgomery, Severino, James Tyon, and Nestor, good old Nestor Cortez, who's been a very pleasant surprise. We'll see how hitters do against him once they get a book on him. But, you know, he's been very good. You know, I think, you know, he and Montgomery a little bit homer happy. I think he's given up a couple of home runs, and Cole and Sevy are both walking a lot of guys. But, you know, Nestor, like, you know, if you start looking at, like, K for nine, you know, Nestor and Cole looks very, very good. You know, Nestor is pretty good on whip as well. Severino, not as great, and Cole, you know, his numbers don't look as good there either, but a lot of that is because he started out so poorly, and I think that's going to come down. So, you know, pretty good, you know, Nestor again, 28 strikeouts, that's pretty darn good. So we'll see, and the bullpen too has been pretty good, other than, you know, Lois Egan and Chad Green, who are in the negative on war, but Michael King has been a pleasant surprise, and, you know, Holmes and Chapman have been pretty good. So mostly the pitching looks pretty good there, despite the fact that it really shouldn't be, and that's what makes me a little bit skeptical. So, you know, curious what you guys think. Do we think that they can keep this up? I mean, you know, Cole accepted, who I think has kind of figured it out and will be fine. He's a very good pitcher, but, you know, we worry a little bit about Sevy with the injuries and whether the rest of these guys can really maintain this.
You know, I want to see them post Memorial Day. I want to see if they're still pitching this well as we get into June. Because if they are at that point, then I think we have to start taking it seriously. But until then, you know, you can see, like you're talking, you mentioned some of those stats. Like, these guys really shouldn't be, maybe they are pitching a little over their heads. But you know, time will tell. You know, we get to the end of this month, get into the next month, Irby. Maybe the Yankees do have something brewing with their pitching staff.
Oh, I do think there's something brewing in a positive way, yes. I mean, when you look at 68 runs allowed in 24 games, it's hard to find holes there. Like you really are finding holes, and that's the second best of the American League, second best in the league, only behind the Dodgers. If we're going to find issues, if we're going to find problems, the only one I would point at is if we're looking at pitches per start, innings per start from the starters. This is the byproduct of, or whatever, this is the result. This is the result of what's happening from the spring training issues that we have. And there's nothing we can do about it. You know, and so right now these Yankees pitchers are not going as deep. So what happens when they go deeper? What happens when they're seeing these guys third, fourth time around? Are they able to hold those same numbers? I don't know. You know, that's what we're going to find out as it goes forward.
Yeah, Smith, I think, what do you think here? Because I'm still on the wait and see. I'm not going to discard what they've done. Of course not. Why would you? But I think I need to see a few more weeks of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, Memorial Day is the standard. You know, we always use that as the benchmark. You know, that's kind of where we find out who you are and whether what you've been doing is legit. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that's always the case. I mean, I guess more what I'm wondering is, you know, what can we make any estimations now? You know, because we all know where the cutoff is for real stats. But I don't know. I mean, I think this is going to come down a little bit. Like, I don't think this is, like, a lights-out pitching staff. Like, I'm honestly way more convinced by what I've seen out of, like, Mets pitching, out of guys like, you know, good old Miguel and Gorilla. Carlos Carrasco looks really, really good. Bassett has looked good. Max is God. He can do anything he wants. But, those just seem more sustainable to me. This looks a little bit shakier, and again, I don't mean Cole. I'm not even sure I mean Severino outside of the injury risk, and I do think their bullpen is pretty legit, but, you know, all these guys, you know, Montgomery, Cortez, and Taillon, I just need to see a little bit more, just wonder a little bit about, well, and here's, I guess, the other thing about Memorial Day when you have pitchers like this, especially Cortez, people, nobody's really seen all that much, is like, well, wouldn't that be about enough time, do you think, for people to kind of get a book on you and start figuring out what to do with you as opposing hitters.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting, you know, I think, when we've seen them go against some of the better offensive players, the guys who we know are really, really good at adjusting. I mean, take Miggy on down, people who can adjust from one at bat to the next, who have really started to hit these guys kind of later in games. And that, to me, is somewhat of an indicator that this is going to change a little. It doesn't mean they'll be bad. It just means they won't be quite as good as they have.
You know, I think, to that point, I think that if I was in the AL East right now and I didn't play in New York, I think I'd be very concerned about the fact that they could come back down, just like you're saying, and still be better than everybody else in that division, the pitching staff.
Yeah.
So they've got some room to come back. And something I would the way they're pitching, I don't think any team can maintain that all year long, but they're going to come back down a little, but they're still so far out in front of everyone else in the pitching department, outside of maybe the DMs. The rest of the league needs to be paying attention too, because this is that Yankee team. We'll get a little bit later on into what's going on with the two New York teams, but given just coming back a little bit like we expect them to, they're still better, certainly in the East.
Right, and they're hitting well, too. So they can afford to not pitch quite as well.
Right.
They're still going to win baseball games. And they're stretching out a big lead in the East, which I think the Blue Jays can, you know, it's like they're far from done. I mean, we're in the first month of the season. But I worry a little bit about some of the other teams a little bit farther down the pike. We're going to get into one of those in a minute. They can afford to come back to the mean a little bit and still be in pretty good shape. So that's a good point.
All right. What else do you have for us tonight?
All right. Well, let's hop over to the West and talk about a little bit of the mea culpa maybe for us, although, again, it's still early, and I would urge you to come back to the Memorial Day thing that Bo mentioned about this before we start cementing this stuff. But the Giants, guys, I mean, it's not like we thought they were going to be bad. Certainly not. But we did not think that they were going to be neck and neck with the Dodgers at this point in the season, or really at any point in the season. They lost the pitching. They're a younger team mixed with weird, very young, very old, strange mix of players. We just didn't think that they could do it again. So far, they look pretty good. I mean, they were a game and a half back as of this afternoon, and they would be, I think, the second wild card if the season ended today. So it's probably not going to change much. I mean, I guess to me it's like, well, again, I mean, I think we're talking about it. Can they maintain this? Because the Dodgers aren't going away. I mean, I think you can make the argument that the Padres are probably playing better than they actually are right now. I mean, we saw it last
year.
We know how that's going to go, right? But the Dodgers aren't going anywhere. So can the Giants keep this up? I mean, there's nothing about them. It's different than the Yankees situation. I don't necessarily see people kind of falling off from where they are, but they are a lot better than we expected. I don't know. Do you buy it? Are you buying this?
I might be, you know, because what I find interesting about this, you know, like we're going to say all the time up until Memorial Day, we've got to wait until then to really lock these races in, but it's not like the Dodgers are scuffling right now. Like, it's not like they're 10-9 and the Giants are a game and a half back. The Dodgers are out to a 15-7 start, and the Giants are right there. So that tells me a lot about what the Giants are doing right now. Can they sustain it? That's obviously the question, and we're not going to be able to answer that for a little while. But right now, I might be buying what they're doing.
Yeah, the Giants thing, man, this is I hate doing too early and say I'm going to start drinking this Kool-Aid, but I don't want to miss this bandwagon here from last year, because this is we are having the same discussion 12 months ago of can they keep it up, and well, how dare we say no? And I know we're not saying no, because this team is legit, and they are in this fight. And the difference this year is that the Padres have, for the time being, shown that they're going to be in the fight as well right now. So the Giants may well be the same, maybe just a little bit, probably a little bit less than last year, but that's still pretty darn good, and it's only good for third right now. So Giants, yeah, man, I'm loving this, absolutely loving this. Can they stay blow for blow with the Dodgers and the Padres? Look, everything on paper says no. No, there's just too much talent on those two teams for the Giants to do it. But, hey, they did it last year. It's a lot of the same characters. It's a lot of the same leadership. So I'm not betting against it. Yeah, I'm going to start drinking this Kool-Aid of the Giants being the team that how many of us are going to be sitting there going, wait, who is on their roster? Exactly. Well, you start paying attention now.
How about you, Samantha? You buy them?
Yeah, what I don't buy is Padres. I mean, they're scuffling around with the Indians right now in extra innings of a doubleheader. You know, they had a huge lead, and then the Indians came back on them. So that's not great, considering they're 100% dependent on their pitching and a team that can't pitch. Is crawling back. It's one game. But this is what happens to the Padres, right? Like, they play fantastic baseball when they're going up against the Dodgers, and then they just screw up all over the place when they're playing everybody else. So, I mean, playing down to poor opponents is tough. I mean, especially when you're talking about, like, I heard somebody call the Indians a barometer team earlier, and they're saying, look, they're losing to good teams and they're beating up on bad teams. And right now they're in a position where they might split, which is just a two-game series, which, again, doesn't mean anything in and of itself, but it really makes me wonder about the Padres. I actually have a lot more confidence in the Giants to kind of hang around because they've been more consistent and because they're beating good teams. They're winning, they're getting quality wins. They're winning by large margins.
Sure.
They're beating good teams. So, yeah, I mean, I think to an extent I buy it, and a lot of it is precedent, right? Like, it looked exactly like this last year, like Irby pointed out, and we went, really, where did they come from? And last year was a lot easier to dismiss them because lots of people jump out to an early lead and then fall apart, and we had no expectations for the Giants. But this year we do have the expectations, and we also have a full season last year, so of just saying, hey, they are going to hang around. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is pretty legit. I will buy this.
Okay. What else you have for us tonight?
All right, last thing. Other direction. other direction. Red Sox, like, panic button, panic button. I know it's early. I don't know that it matters. Like, I think you should be panicking. I mean, you are in a really, really competitive division. You have three teams that are not going away. The Yankees, even if they come back to the mean a little bit, they're not going away. The Blue Jays will probably only get better. The Rays just never really go away. So, you know, you're 10-14, which is absolutely not terrible, but you're 8 games out. 8 games. So, yeah, it's, I mean, it stinks. You play in a really competitive division. If you were 10-14 in a lot of other divisions, you'd be a handful of games out, and it would be very tenable. But you're way back. And you're getting worse, not better, than how you looked at the beginning of the season. And so much of the problem is that, you know, they have a negative run differential, and this was supposed to be a team that was kind of built on its offense. We knew the pitching was going to be weak, and they're not hitting. I mean, and you know, we have this whole weird issue with Boggerson's story. You know, Boggerson's quote was, he's here now. Like, that's what he had to say about that. And if I'm Boggerson, I kind of blame him, right? Because, like, you think this guy's going to steal your job? Like, you know, Boggerson looks pretty darn good. Story's hitting 208. Like, not great. And you have a whole bunch of guys. I mean, we always say batting average is a garbage stat, but I will tell you where batting average tells you a pretty accurate story is when you were hitting below the Mendoza line a month into the season and you're a team that is supposed to be dependent on your offense, and Kike Hernandez is hitting 197 and Bobby Dalbec's hitting 147 and Jackie Bradley is hitting 169 and you really only have Devers and Boggers who are doing well, and I guess JD Martinez is sort of a part-time player, but you know, if you're going to rely on your offense, you got to hit, and they're not hitting.
No. No, they're not, and, you know, I don't really think that this is – I mean, this is an old baseball adage, and I don't know if it's still relevant in today's game, but, you know, it used to be that, you know, you can't win a division in April, but you can certainly lose one, and I think that's what the Red Sox are doing here, Irby. Like, I don't put that final nail in the coffin this early in the season ever, unless you're the Cincinnati Reds, and of course I will. But Boston, 8 games back – You got two quality teams in front of them. They're what, 4.5 back of the Blue Jays right now? And I don't know. I don't – as early as it is, 8 seems rather insurmountable at this point.
Yeah, we're definitely at that point with Boston where you're looking at it, and it's – yeah, you've got – the Yankees are 8 up, and you're 4.5 behind Tampa and Toronto. So this isn't a conversation that we may be having – in multiple other divisions, like maybe a Cardinals conversation with the Brewers, where it's like, okay, it's one team that you got to catch. No, you've got to pass 3 teams. So, yeah, 8 is not insurmountable. The 4.5 behind those guys, you know, this is not insurmountable for the postseason, especially where we're at with the postseason. But we're at that pendulum swing right now. Like it's this early in the season, and you're already having the conversation of, okay, well, we're not out of it yet. It's like, well, that's not a good conversation to be having, you know, because a bad week, a bad couple weekends, and you are out. Yeah, you can have a good week, and you can be right back in it. And we hear that conversation all the time. We're just one good week, one good week away from getting back in it. Yeah, well, you're one good week from being out of it completely. And these are not scrub teams. These are not teams that haven't been there and could go deep in front of you. So, yeah, Boston, I agree with Samantha's assessment that, yeah, it's time to hit that panic button. You got to fix things, and you got to fix it yesterday.
Yeah, but is it fixable, though? I think that's the question. I mean, Samantha, Irby's been saying this about Trevor Story for the last year, that his numbers are going the wrong direction at the plate. And here we go again. Now he's off to what, a 208 start? Is that what you said, 208? I mean, what exactly can the Red Sox do to fix this? I mean, I don't see them making moves at the deadline. I don't see them making any moves at this point, where they're at in the standing. So can they even turn this around? Can they fix it? I don't think it's fixable.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's like Irby said, I mean, it's not the 8 games. It's the number of teams between you and that 8 games that concerns me. Mm-hmm. Or, like, take a look at the wild card standings. You have 7 teams in front of you right now. And could you pass 7 teams between now and the end of the season? Sure, absolutely. But, like, you're behind all of the second-place teams in other divisions. You're behind the Dens. You're behind Oakland. Oakland. I mean, you're behind Houston, you know, and you've got a whole bunch of teams in your own division. Like, there's a big crowd hanging around in that, like, projected to go just over 500 fringy wild card group. I mean, like, yeah. I don't think the wild card is on the table for them. Like, I feel fairly comfortable saying, unless a lot of these teams really crash and burn, which is a possibility with some of the teams in the Central and certainly with Oakland, they're kind of headed the wrong direction. I don't think any of us trust the Angels. We'll get into that a little bit more in a minute, but,
right.
You know, like, 8 games is a lot to be out of a division when there's 3 teams standing between you and the top of that. That is a far, far uglier mark than if you are the second-place team. I mean, Irby, I think it was you that brought up the Cardinals, right? Like, okay, if the Cardinals fall 8 games behind the Brewers at this point in the season – which they're not, but if they are, am I throwing them out? No, absolutely not. I also know what the Cardinals do late in the season. And Boston isn't doing what they're supposed to do, which is hit and hit and hit and pray they can score enough runs to overcome their own pitching. But they're not hitting. So, okay, everybody's slumping, whatever. Irby, 100% right about Trevor Story. All the numbers have been going in the wrong direction. Like, you want to find him as an extra, okay, but it looks like it's creating some problems in sort of your clubhouse situation with Boggers. Like, was that worth it? Like, I don't know. Why'd you bother spending the money? It's not like he's making them worse, but he's certainly not making them better. So I don't know. I mean, this has a little bit of a panic button feel to me because there's just too many teams between where they need to be and where they're at and no end in sight.
See, I mean, at this point, I feel like they should have already pressed the panic button hard enough that they destroyed it. I mean, this is bad. This is bad. Boston, I don't know if they can. This is too big of a hole. Like, I don't know if they can dig themselves out of this and even make, like you said, Smith, make a run at that last wild card spot, which will go to a team that's floating around 500. We all know that. I don't think Boston's going to be there at this point. So, yikes. Irby, anything else on this one before we get into your three things?
Yeah, you're 2 games ahead of the Orioles, so there's your yikes.
Oh, dear. Oh,
yikes.
That qualifies as a yikes. Yes, it absolutely does. Man. All right, Irv, go ahead. What are your 3 topics from the last handful of days?
So the first one I'll jump on is a guy that, you know, still kind of in a lollygagging purgatory, trying to earn his way out. By good deeds and all that. And that's one George Springer. Mr. Springer, did his time, and we can get into that later. But he is, for the issues that the Blue Jays have had, leadoff has not been one of the problems. And he has definitely been a huge catalyst, put himself there in the top 10 all-time leadoff home runs. Done that. I mean, and he's leading the team batting average, home runs, strikeouts too, but it's the on-base, you know, 350 on-base percentage. This is what they paid for. And for the Blue Jays to be successful, for the Blue Jays to have any chance of, you know, 3.5 behind, tie with Tampa, 3.5 behind New York, for them to be successful, it's got to be, you know, I mean, this is exactly what we see. It's this catalyst. There's so much power. There's so many wonderful things behind him in that offense. If Springer's not getting on, if he's not starting it, this offense definitely has issues, and we're seeing it with the team as a whole. You know, it's not going to be reluctant on, you know, pitching's an issue. It's going to be an offensive team, and they're getting the job done, and they're still in this fight. They're absolutely in this fight, but a huge reason for their success is George Springer, and it's kind of nice being, you know, we all kind of are cheering for the Blue Jays this year. We've all picked them. It's nice to see what he has done so far for them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Samantha, I look at George Springer, I see the pilot light of every offense he's been in. Like, he's the one that starts it. And you talk about Irby, you talk about the top 10 and leadoff home runs. I mean, that's a big deal. It's a lot bigger deal than it sounds. I mean, that is such a, you know, it's a very specific stat. But that's a big deal. You know, that was the one thing that he did. He's doing it now with its very good offense. It's right. It makes that lineup just smothering. If you get that quick 1-0 lead in the first batter of your at bat in the first inning, like you get that quick 1-0 lead, and the rest of it just kind of goes snowballs from there. I mean, this is what we saw in Houston. I think we're finally seeing it for real in Toronto. I'm not sure we saw it before now in Toronto, but now we are. And it makes that lineup in Toronto that much more dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, leadoff home runs really don't excite me. I think they're fun to watch and everything, but, like, let's say you get 10 of them this season, so that's 10 games where you jump out to a 1-0 lead. Like, I don't know that really translates in any way directly into wins. So I think it's kind of an overvalued stat, even if it's fun. But what I do love, you know, you said the word pilot light, which is a great way to talk about him, is that he's a spark plug, and I think that's what you want out of your leadoff hitter. It's not – I don't like whittling it down to home runs, but – you know, to get that table setter, which, I mean, Toronto certainly not lacking for good hitters. But, again, you know, we've all been very upfront about the fact that we're not very confident in the pitching there. And that's still true. It's been better than we expected, but I still don't feel great about it. And that bullpen is very scary. And I'm not sure the rotation is completely tenable as it is either. So they're going to have to hit and hit and hit and hit. And I think Springer is a great sort of like spark plug kind of guy. He's what you want out of a leadoff hitter. And he is, you know, okay, if we want to take somebody the opposite direction of Trevor Story, you know, right now he's outperforming his career numbers. You know, his OPS is up a couple of ticks over his career numbers. And, you know, here's where the home runs, the power is valuable. Is I don't care about leadoff home runs, but I do care if my table setter guy has also got a little bit of power, right? So when he's hitting those home runs, I don't care. But he's got 6 of them already this season, which is pretty darn good for a guy who you basically paid to get on base. So that, I think, is important.
Irby, what else you got for us?
So the next one I'll talk about a team that I jumped on early last year, and it was fun to watch. The Brewers, you know what? Taking care of business in the NL Central right now, and I know it's not the most difficult of divisions. It's, you know, easier to do when you've only got four teams trying. But a big part of this Brewers, and, you know, the offense is there, but it's been the pitching. The pitching, this is a strength of this team last year. It's a strength of this team this year again. But it's not the same. Last year, you know, the conversation with the Brewers, and it's the concern we have with them is, sure, you've got Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff, and then you've got Devin Williams on the front end, and then you've got Devin Williams and Josh Hader on the back end. But what else do you have besides those four? And then they go in the postseason, and Devin Williams punches his way out of the postseason, and so now you're down to three pitchers, and they don't survive. It's different this year because numbers-wise, you could argue that Brandon Woodruff is their least effective pitcher. He had an amazing outing, struck out 12 today. Going to correct those numbers quickly. But he's going to figure it out. Brandon Woodruff is going to turn it around. It's Eric Lauer. It's Adrian Houser are stepping up and not just having one or two good. Those two have 5 combined quality starts through 8 starts. And one of those, it should be 6, if it's Houser was pulled with 5 2/3, only giving up 1 earned run. Something about his manager pulling guys too soon. I don't know what this is all about. But this is a different thing. And can it, you know, it's a similar conversation as the Yankees. Can this hold up for the whole season? We don't know. Can these guys continue to do it the whole season? We don't know. You know, the odds say both of them, absolutely not. We should see some regress, absolutely. But, man, if you've got 4 guys that are getting the job done and constantly going out with quality starts, that's how you not only win a division, but that's how you win in October.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and I agree with that. Like, this has a different feel in Milwaukee than it has the past couple of years. I mean, pitching has not been the problem. Last year it wasn't. You look at them now, they're neck and – the Cardinals are right there. They're 2 games back. I mean, this is a 2-horse race in the National League Central, and we all know the Cardinals and what they do in the second half of the season. So I think the Brewers still have some work to do. They need to build up a little bit more of a lead going into that second half. But, Samantha, I'm absolutely buying these Brewers, and I'm not talking about just the Central. I mean, they pitch like that in October, getting just enough offense, which is what they're getting right now. They're plus 22 in run differential. Like, that's a team to watch come October, come playoff time. It's not just the marathon They might be able to, they might be able to handle a sprint finally in Milwaukee for the first time in a while.
You may consider me not at all convinced of any of that. I don't buy that this team is going to hit well enough to be competitive in October because, all right, well, like, what's going to happen to you when you face the Dodgers in October? You're going to – I don't see how they can possibly win a series against the Dodgers, the Giants, heck, the Mets. I mean, right now there are just too many teams that can do too many things well and not really impressed by the offense here and the pitching. So, yes and no. I mean, Corbin Burns has been amazing. He always does. He's got like 32.2 innings in the books already. So, you know, he's very Max Scherzer-like with his like .73. He's been excellent. I mean, Woodruff has been terrible. I mean, I think his ERA is over 5. He has like a -3 WAR, but he's going to be fine. He will be fine. I'm not worried about him. Peralta, on the other hand, has also been terrible, and I am very worried about him. So I think a lot of this is going to come down to whether Lauer and Hosmer can keep this up because they both look very, very good, and so far so good. I don't think we have any reason to think that they can't, but it's long season, and these guys are unproven, and if we're going into a postseason, and let's say they do hang on and beat the Cardinals, maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know to really know. I don't really trust the Brewers to maintain this, and I do trust the Cardinals to kind of make a second-half run, so we'll see. But let's say they survive this. I'm pretty sure the Brewers are going to find their way into the playoffs, at the very least, one way or the other. But, I mean, okay, so you're going to go out and you're going to win. You know, Corbin Burns is going to win you a game. What do you do after that? You know, probably Woodruff can win you a second game. That'll probably win a 5-game series. Is it win a 7-game series? Not if you can't hit. I'm not sold on this at all. Like, I think it's headed in the right direction, but I'm not sure that I'm buying this.
It's a very good point. You know, the Mets and the Dodgers, they could pitch too. So that's a very good point.
I mean, something catastrophic will happen to the Mets. But, you know, we all know this. It's as good as they look, something weird is going to happen. But, you know, the Dodgers will be there. So.
All right, Irby. What's your third thing?
I was going to say real quick, Corbin Burns, 7 walks on the season. That's a significant number because that's 7 more than he had at this point last year. So. A big one there. And then, on Samantha, the other one on yours, the leading hitter for the Brewers right now, batting average-wise, Rowdy Tellez, batting .232.
I'm glad he's happy in his new home. I'm glad he's happy there. We love him. We love Rowdy. That's excellent. Also, no chance. So I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah. Right. I was going to say, .232, he's sitting there going, yes. I'm rocking and rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the other, I'm going to head out west, let's talk about actual good hitting. Let's talk about positives in hitting, some good stuff. We all know the Angels pay a lot of money for guys like Trout, Ohtani. They have the best 1-2, Rendon and all that. Taylor Ward, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, Ward, W-A-R-D, not Tyler Wade. It'd be real difficult. I just want to get that done right off the bat. It's difficult. I know I'm not the only one struggling with that. Taylor Ward, not Tyler, the outfielder. Taylor Ward. Taylor Ward, hello. Welcome to baseball. And I know he's been around a while. This is not some kid. Tell me, but man, having a fantastic start to the season and being a catalyst for that offense. And his numbers aree 371 average, 1190 OPS. Multiple things. He's driven in 13 runs. The point behind this is that Taylor Ward, it's not the guy you would think. Like you, Ohtani, Trout, Rendon, even Jared Walsh, you know, guys like this. You know this offense. We know this offense. And when you get somebody like Taylor Ward who – this is so funny how baseball works. We for years heard about Joe Adell. Mm-hmm. He's going to do this with Trout. You know, that outfield's going to be amazing, and it fizzles.
and Adele gets auctioned down to the minors, and Taylor Ward is the embodiment of what you thought you were getting with Joe Adele. And that's what I love about baseball, is we can talk about a prospect all day long. I'm one that does it. I love talking about prospects. And it's all done for, honestly, this stuff right here, where we can say how wonderful they are, but you got to go out and you got to get the job done. And Taylor Ward is doing that. I mean, 16 runs. Normally we'd sit there at this point of the season, and he's only played in 17 games. He scored 16 times, and you'd go, dang, kid, great job. You know, who's ahead of you? Some guy named Trout, some guy named Ohtani. Pretty good company to be in right there. So love the start that we've seen from this young man, you know, tied in the league. It's just all around. It's been a huge boost to this team, and it's the reason why the Angels are where they are right now.
It's a start, though, Samantha. And yeah, you look at his career, his highest – let's just focus on average for a second. His career high was .277. That was in the COVID-shortened season of 2020. He's hitting .370. He's almost 100 points higher than his career high. It's a great start. I'm not taking anything away from the standing. I'm not sure I'm buying it at this point. He's going to come back down to his career numbers. All players do. What do the Angels do then, I think, is my question, Samantha, because 371's great, 16 runs in 17 games, great. That's a heck of a start, but it just doesn't feel genuine yet to me.
Well, I agree with you, although my reasoning is different, because to be fair to this guy, he's never played a full season before. 65 games is the most
fair.
He's played in a season,
sure.
And that was last year. He played 34 games in 2020. So, you know, he's been around for what, I think this is 4 years, 5 years, and he's never played, you know, 65 is where he topped out. So I don't know that we can take anything away from batting average last year or this year and say, oh, he's going to come back to his career batting average. However, do I think that this dude is going to continue to hit the way he is? No, it's going to come down a little bit. The question is, how much is it going to come down? Because I'm with you sort of in a general sense and that I need to see more. But I have to tell you, like, you know, I watched the Angels kick the crap out of my Deans for four straight games, and this guy was a menace. I mean, you're like, everybody's like, who is this guy? Why does this keep happening? He had three home runs in the first 2 days of the season, or the series, and we're all like, who are you? I mean, we know who he is. We've seen him before, and Irby, you're absolutely right. He's like, he's Joe Adele once we realized Joe Adele wasn't Joe Adele, and although the Tyler Wade thing is making me insane, like that would be utility player Tyler Wade, you know, formerly Yankees utility player prior to this season. But like one of them's got to change their name, right? I mean, if they're going to be good, you know, if both of them are going to be starting caliber players, then I demand that one of them change their name because they're like the same person to me right now, and they can't. I can't allow this. But yeah, I mean, Taylor Ward, who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Certainly driving that Angels team right now. Ohtani and Trout are always going to get the headlines, but, you know, I mean, he's certainly a big part of what they're doing. Irby, anything else you want to add to this one before we get into the rest of the AL West?
No. That's good. It's fun. And I guess I'll do that. I will agree with you guys. Yes, I expect the numbers to come down, but where to? And that's what's going to be fun to find out is you can be a player that's figuring itself out around a lineup that doesn't really protect you. This is not one of them. And so it will be interesting to see how his numbers come down with this lineup around him and where it shapes this Angels offense, who's currently first place in the American League West.
By game. You know, let's talk about that West. The Angels are certainly right there. They're 15 and 10. The Astros, Samantha, after a sluggish start, have started to turn their jets on. They're only a game back, 7-3 in the last 10, same as the Angels. The Mariners, they were our pick. They were supposed to be the team, and they're sitting there a game under .500, three games out. I mean, this was the year Seattle was supposed to take this thing. The Angels are doing their best to put a stop to that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think this division is anywhere near what we're going to see even in Memorial Day at this point. The Astros stay hot, and the Angels stay hot. They'll pull away, and it'll be a two-team race. But right now the West is not shaping up the way we thought it would.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I think we all knew, you know, Oakland is sort of fading as we expected. I think ultimately they may fade all the way to the back. Texas is, you know, looks like they're on the right end of a rebuild. The other three, I think Houston is doing about as we expected. The Angels have been better than expected, clearly, and I hope they can maintain this, mostly because they are our greatest hope to get rid of the trash cans. So I'm not a
right.
Angels fan,
yeah.
But I like Ohtani. I like Mike Trout. You know, I don't hate them. They're not trash cans, so by virtue of not being – the bar as well is what I'm saying, I guess. So, okay, you know what, Angels? Sure, why not? I mean, Ohtani and Trout in the playoffs, like who would argue against that, and who would argue against getting rid of the trash can? So, yeah, I mean, whether they can keep this up, I don't know. I'm inclined to say no. Again, I don't trust the pitching. It always comes back to that, right? I mean, unless you're talking about, you know, the Mets, the Deans, these teams that have these sort of indestructible pitching staff, then I just don't trust anybody's pitching to kind of hang on like that. You're not the Dodgers. You're not the Deans. You know, you do have offense that some of these other teams that we talk about don't have, but is it going to be enough? I mean, what do we say about the Angels every year? They're going to lose a lot of 8-7 games, right? And I don't know that that's necessarily going to change. I mean, even the games they're winning, they're not exactly winning, you know, they're not 5-0 games, you know, they're like 6-4, stuff like that. So that's a little bit concerning. But I got to tell you, the Mariners guys, I'm worried. I'm worried about our picks. The kids, I mean, I think Julio Rodriguez is very legit. I think he is going to be fine ultimately, but he is scuffling hard out of the gate. I mean, it doesn't look good right now, and I don't think this means anything for his career. I think he is going to be fine ultimately, but he doesn't look too good. Kalnick, you know, there's a guy I am worried about. He doesn't look great either, and hopefully they will both be fine. I'm rooting for him. I would like to see Seattle get back in the mix here. Obviously, you guys know my allegiance is to your Rangers above all, but since they're not in the conversation this year, I'd love to see the Mariners kind of sneak in there and steal it. But you're right. I mean, this is supposed to be the year where we didn't necessarily, and they were our pick to win the division, but we weren't necessarily saying, oh, this is the year where you have to make the leap to win the division or you rebuild the spot. We were saying, this is the year where you have to turn the corner, right? And right now they look a little bit stalled out. So that's worrisome. I'm going to stop talking about this because this is you guys' division. We know it better than anybody. But, man, I mean, don't you think there's a little bit of an issue here with the Mariners and that they look a little stuck?
Well, I mean, Irby, we've seen this movie before from Seattle where on paper they look like a team that should win 88 to 92 games, be in the conversation if not win the American League West, and they're not playing – up to their caliber. Like they're playing beneath themselves right now at 12-13, and we've seen that there's a reason why they had this long playoff drought. They get a good team like this, and they don't execute on the field.
Yeah, it's weird. It you know, in the Mariners, we see these runs too, where they just kind of disappear for a time, and then I know it's what they're going through right now with this road trip that – for them was a road trip from hell. You know, it starts off with a win in Tampa, and then in Tampa, Miami, and Houston, they only win one more game of the next eight. So, yeah, things fell apart quick. And this is what they do. Like, this is what the Mariners do is they disappear for a week and a half, 2 weeks at a time. And when you're in the rebuild or you're in the building phase, so be it. I mean, do whatever. It doesn't – who cares? The Rangers start off 2-10. You know, it's part of the building character. But when you're, like you guys said, when you're at that point where you got to turn the corner and you got to start making some noise, look, you didn't have to go into Houston. You know, they beat Houston earlier in the year, in a three-game series. You didn't have to go into Houston and win that series. But to get shut out, to get swept, and to get shut out twice, I mean, it's almost the – it's like you're the upstart kid. Hey, I'm here. No, you're not. And so, yeah, this is still a good team, and I still have some confidence the Mariners can make some serious noise in this division just because of the issues that the Angels have with pitching and the Astros have with consistency. NXT all around. You know, they absolutely are in this division, absolutely. But not a great little road trip there. And so I'm curious to see how they turn this around coming home. Of course, you're coming home and you get Tampa. So it's not the, not the coming home party. But, the Seattle needs to – they need to get a nice little series win just for their own little confidence boost.
Well, I mean, this homestand coming up for them, this for early May is a pretty big homestand. Because, I don't put a lot of clout in the splits just yet, Samantha, you know that, but I can't ignore they're 7-2 at home and 5-11 on the road. So this is a pretty big homestand for them if they don't want to get find themselves in a hole they can't dig out of.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think. Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, we come back to, okay, like it's too early, but you mentioned it earlier when we were talking about the Red Sox, like you can't win a division at this time of year, but you can lose one. And that's what I'm worried about here, is that all of a sudden we're talking about a pivotal homestand and it's May. Like, theoretically, if you're doing your job, you shouldn't be having pivotal homestands in May. Like, you should be able to go through a series in May if you are a good competitive team and basically, like, wet the bed and be okay. And, but you're right. I don't think they can afford to do that. And that's how I think you kind of know you're in trouble. Also, what I haven't seen then is, like, I have watched the Angels just play, like, blow you away kind of baseball at times. I mean, does that guarantee they're going to win the division or get anywhere? No, of course not. But I've seen it. And I think, heck, I've seen teams that are way behind all these teams play like blow you away baseball. I mean, we've seen it out of the Twins, who nobody believes in. We've seen it out of the D-ins, who we believe is basically a slightly above 500 wild card team. Like, all these teams have played phenomenally good baseball, and that's something we haven't seen out of the Mariners. They're getting by. I mean, are we going to go back to the run differential issue again with them? Like, you're going to need to beat up on somebody to sell me on this.
Yeah.
The position that you're in, and I'm not seeing it. So
no, I'm with you on that. I mean, they got the same run differential right now as the Astros, but the Astros also really struggled early. Like Irby said, with consistency, I'm not buying that true tie. The Astros have the leg up there. The Angels at +14. I mean, that's not on par with some of the other first place teams we have in the league right now. But at least they're not down there with the Astros and Mariners. They're not negative like the A's and the Rangers. I mean, there's a lot of story left to be told in this division, but I see a lot more warning signs with Seattle than I do with anybody else in the West. And the A's are going to be what we thought. The Rangers are going to be what we thought. The Mariners right now are not what we thought. So keep an eye on it. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll probably come back to this division in a month and see where everything is. But right now, signs are pointing good for the Angels, good for the Astros, and not so hot for Seattle. Okay. Let's get into this, because this is the talk of baseball right now, the two New York teams. I've heard Subway Series way, way too many times this early in the season. I think, it's a great start for the Mets. It's a great start for the Yankees. But, Samantha, you look at these two of the teams in baseball, these are the two I trust the least. We've been down this road with the Mets. I think Max Scherzer is the difference maker. He's the X factor. That's why I'm a lot more confident in them than I have been in the past. But you got the Yankees and their injury history. You got the Mets and their history of screwing everything up. I'm not buying it. One of them absolutely probably will come out of one of these leagues. I don't think they both do.
I don't actually think either of these teams is going to World Series. Like you said, I don't really believe the Yankees are anywhere near as good as they look right now. And the Mets, like, we all know something's going to happen. We don't know what it will be, but something will happen. So, yeah, I don't buy it. I don't think there's going to be – I would almost guarantee you there won't be a Subway Series, just because – I mean, let's just go purely based on odds. How many times are the two teams with the best records at the beginning of May the teams that end up in the World Series? Pretty much never.
Right.
So just play the odds, right? Like, also, crosstown series, they almost never happen. The last time we actually did have a Subway Series, neither of these teams looked all that good early in the season. It was a surprise. Like, whoever is leading in May is generally not who comes out alive in the end. It pretty much never happens. So that's not how baseball works. And I have a lot of questions about the Yankees. about their ability to maintain. The injury history, as you pointed out, is horrendous. The Mets are cursed, you know, so we just have to wait and see which form the curse takes. Also, like, I have a hard time getting excited about these crosstown series. Like, it's like a weird marketing thing that I don't think most baseball fans really care all that much about. I think people would rather see something different. And they're like, whoa, Subway Series, which is basically something that gets screamed by the same, like, guy from New Jersey who stands up at a Yankees game and is like, New York is the greatest city in the world. And, you know, the rest of us are looking at him going, you're not even from this state, pal. Like, okay, you know, Frank Sinatra, Bleacher Bum, you know, these Demodose guys. Yeah, that's who wants a Subway Series. Like, I don't think anybody wants this, and I think the chances of it happening are even smaller than the number of people who would like to see it happen. So, sorry to disappoint, but, yeah, I don't think there's a Subway Series or a Freeway Series. Let's put that out there, too.
Yeah.
Which is the dumbest thing to call a crosstown L.A. Series, but that ain't happening either. Although, you could convince me that the Dodgers will be there in the end, unlike the other three teams that are up for grabs here.
Yeah. Come on, the last Subway Series we had was, what, 22 years ago. Before that, it was like the 50s when New York had half the league in it. So, you know, let's just
yeah, that's a little different. Yeah. Right.
So, I'm not buying it. 50%
chance of a Subway Series back then.
Back then. All right, Irby, how about you? What are you thinking here? Subway Series, yay, nay, too early, all of the above?
D, all of the above. Too early, absolutely too early. Great conversation, sure, wonderful. Talking point, low-hanging fruit talking point. The Freeway Series, Spanty, you mentioned, yeah, that's the other one. I can already hear those conversations start. Imagine the two championship series, Dodgers, Mets, Yankees, Angels. I'm like, ugh. And because it's true, it's outside of those two areas, no one else cares. But it's, sure, great talking point on May 4th. Reality, we got a long way to go. A long way to go. This is the one. So, this is baseball, Major League Baseball season is a marathon, and we're at the point where if we're watching a marathon, we're all looking at that one runner right now going, he is going way too fast. And that runner might pull off a win and hold that pace. But if he doesn't, we're all going to go, remember back at mile three when we were like, why are you running that fast? We're at that point right now. We're at mile three, four, where it's like, whoa, hey, calm down there.
You know, it'd be actually kind of funny if it's Yankees, Dodgers, and if baseball tries to market it as like an old-timey Subway Series. That'd be about as close as we get.
So, I can see that happening. Yeah. This is through New York, and you're like, well, you know that? Okay. This would have been a Subway Series back when we didn't really have Subways. Yeah. You know that I both go put some money on that or something. That's exactly what
I might. I just might. I might do that. Okay.
And the Dodgers, last thing before, Dodgers fans would be enraged.
Absolutely, should be. Okay. One more thing before we get into let's remember some trades. Let's talk about the Braves here for a second. You know, because you take a look, and they're 12-15, six games behind the Mets, and you're wondering what the hell is going on. It's really quick to point out, Samantha, what's going on with the Braves. That rotation is not good. And that's being kind. Kyle Wright's got a 1.74 ERA, but everybody else is 3. And then the bottom, I can't even call it a bottom third because they've got 6 men that have started games so far this season. That bottom 4 is absolutely struggling. And that's being, again, kind. This is not something they can just turn around. This is too many guys struggling out of the gate. If the Braves roll with this rotation the rest of the year, they're going to finish not winning the East. They're going to finish third, fourth in that National League East. I mean, this is bad. And the Braves, you're talking about a panic button with the Red Sox. The Braves probably ought to be looking at that panic button with their rotation right now.
Yeah, it's bad. I just, like, you know, you mentioned that the sort of turnstile at the bottom of the rotation since the rope is on the deal, that has been a disaster pretty much. It seems to me that they can't figure out what to do on the back end. But, okay, you know what, that's not even what really concerns me going forward. That is what's going to put you in third place and out of the playoffs, right? But if you hit better, your other pitchers kind of come through, you'll be in the playoffs. But what concerns me about what happens should they actually make the postseason, right now it don't look like it, but let's say they get it together well enough to do so. Like, you know, Max Fried has actually really been excellent. His whip is like .87. He's been great. He just has had some really bad luck with run support. So he'll be fine. But Charlie Morton is a mess. And Ian Anderson is like kind of a mess. And that's where you win or lose a playoff series, right? So like, okay, Fried goes out there, he goes up against somebody else's ace, maybe wins, maybe loses, somebody wins with two or three runs. Like, okay, maybe you end up on the right end of that, maybe you don't. But how are you going to win another playoff game after that if Charlie Morton and Ian Anderson are pitching the way that they are? You move Kyle Wright up, right? But, like, do we think Kyle Wright can maintain this? Maybe. I mean, he's sort of the anti-Max Fried, right? He's been very, very lucky. And Fried has been very unlucky. So that does not necessarily convince me that, like, Kyle Wright, like, oh, you just slot him in where Charlie Morton is. Who's going to pitch the third game? Like, even if that's true. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is, like, full Red Sox panic button situation yet. I mean, it's really the Red Sox and the White Sox are probably my heaviest, like, I'm, like, mashing that panic button. Like, wow, okay, like, things are on fire. Like, everything is on fire. The Braves, I'm not quite there yet, but, yeah, this is a huge concern. A huge concern.
It's bad. It's bad, you know, and Irby, like, you know, one of,
real bad.
One of my favorite pitching stats, even more than whip, is the strikeout-to-walk ratio. I love that stat. Just for a comparison, Max Fried has a strikeout-to-walk ratio of 27. 27 strikeouts and one walk. The bottom four, they're strikeout to walk 129, 155, 0.86, and 133.
Oh, God.
That is some problems with your bottom four.
1.33?
Yes.
I'm sorry. That's horrendous.
That is
okay.
0.86. Elder has a .86. Yes.
Oh,
strikeout to walk ratio is .86.
No.
Now, I'm not expecting everybody to be Max Fried at 27, but wow, that tells me that's a lot of problems in the bottom four of that rotation, Irby. A lot of problems.
Hey, with the .8, with Bruce Elder, Bruce. I guess you know that if you have a .86. You don't get to be called by your real name, Bryce, so I'm going to call you Bruce now. Bruce Elder. Yeah, that's over 19 innings as well. That's not like a small sample size, but it's not like one or two starts. So, yeah, not looking good. I guess he can boast. They're only giving up three home runs. It's true. All of them had runners on, so not good. Yeah, Kyle Wright, Max Fried. Sure, that part's doing great. But other than that, this is – you know, at the beginning of the season, if you'd have told me that the Nationals, the Pirates, the Reds, and the Rockies had all given up more runs than the Braves, we'd be going, yeah, absolutely. Now, if you'd have told me that'd be the only teams in baseball to give up more runs than the Braves, yeah, we're sitting where we are today at 12 and 15. So, weird side note, the top six, or I guess bottom six in this case, runs allowed, all in the National League. Weird.
A lot of pitching.
That is
not
that.
A lot of pitching.
Real weird. That is really weird.
Yeah, this is not the baseball of our youth anymore. You know, when in a three game series, the Texas Rangers outpitched the Atlanta Braves. That's not what. I love my Rangers, but what? So yes, big concern. It's the Brewers conversation I'm having. This is the Brewers. Sure, you got Kyle Wright, you got Max Fried, and that's it. I do think we can see some turnaround from the Ian Anderson. Sure, absolutely. Charlie Morton,
I mean, history would say he's going to figure it out, so I'll bet on it, but whenever you're ready, Charlie, feel free to figure it out.
You might want to get on that. This is bad. And, you know, these are obviously the defending champs. They lost more offense than they did pitching. I don't know what the hell is going on with this rotation, but it's bad, and it better get turned around fast because they're already, what, they're 6 games back of a Mets team that's pitching a heck of a lot better than this. I don't know. Right now, they're kind of in that group, Samantha, of teams where I've got the hammer and the final nail in my hands. I'm ready to do it. Like they have to show me over the next 2 or 3 weeks that they're going to be able to turn this thing around.
Yeah, there's just too much competition. I mean, I know we joke about that something catastrophic happening to the Mets, but I don't necessarily know that that's going to happen in time to help the Braves. And even if it does, like at this point, are the Braves even the team that's able to take advantage of that? Because right now I'm looking at Miami and Philadelphia and going like, well, you're going to go a long way to go before you're even the one with a good chance to benefit from that. And there's just too much competition in the wild card race. I mean, even if you do kind of backdoor your way in there, you're going to get booted in the first round. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Panic. Panic.
Panic button. Panic button. All right. Irby, anything else on this before we get into Let's Remember Some Trade?
I'll throw the last thing there. Yes, it's you're 3 teams ahead of you. You're 6 behind the Mets. You know, compare the two. Like, you know, it's the Marlins and the Phillies are the 2 teams ahead of you. Who's, if you could only hit one panic button, 2 panic buttons in front of you, you can only hit one. Are you hitting the Boston panic button or the Atlanta panic button?
I'm hitting that panic button.
I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, I think Boston, isn't Boston the team that's more likely to be able to, like, pull something out of their ass of the two? But they're also in way
yes.
more shape, and they have a way bigger hill to climb. So,
And better teams. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then a lot more in front of you. Like, there's a lot more competition for those wild card spots.
Yeah.
So,
like, it's almost, no, I agree with you. Boston's in a better position, but I probably hit the panic button for them because of what's around you. The Braves passing the Marlins and the Phillies, I mean, it's not crazy. It's a game and a half behind those two. And the Mets, you know, we all think of Mets. So, yeah, I agree. I panic button. Boston's in a better place, but it's a quicker panic button because of what's around you.
Yeah, I agree. All right. All right, Samantha, what do you have for us tonight with Let's Remember Some Trade? Are you ready to stump Irby and I again?
All right, let's see how you guys do. You guys did pretty well last week. So hopefully this is not a super hard one, I don't think, which in the interest of time, as you guys know, we got a bit of a late start tonight, so don't want to keep everybody here all night. So hopefully these guys can help you all out, get us all out of here a little quicker. So I don't think this one's too bad, but I guess we'll find out. So let's go back. Get your time machine and go back to the year 2010. So we're not going back too far, but we're going to the trade deadline of 2010, and we're looking for a trade that involves the Arizona Diamondbacks. So questions, comments, concerns, early guesses, what do you guys have for me?
Ooh, Diamondbacks.
I love that you said Arizona Diamondbacks. And you said concerns. I'm like, well, yes, lots of concerns. But
are you concerned about the Diamondbacks? Yes. Next question.
The 2010. Ooh. All right, so early first question, were they the seller or the buyer?
Wait, are you actually expecting me to answer that at this point?
No. I was asking Irby.
Oh, no. I'll do what saved us last. Is this a two-team trade or is this a multi-team trade?
Yeah, this is a two-team trade. This is two-team.
Two-team trade. Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where the Diamondbacks were in 2010. Obviously, that was the first of the even years for the Giants. Hmm.
Right. So these guys are working
Diamond.
Through, just for anybody who's out there listening, they're working on their strategy this time, since I already told them how many teams are involved, which they don't necessarily always do, but we did this time. And they're trying to work through. They think that the best starting point for this one is to figure out who's the buyer and who's the seller, which is probably correct in this case, because that will tell you which direction there are more players going, for one thing, which will help you figure out who those players are. And obviously it helps to know who the buyer is and who the seller is, particularly if you can pin down what the team you already have is. It will give you a better idea, but of kind of where they were at. So, because this is a tricky part, right? Like, you got to remember what were the Diamondbacks doing in 2010. That's why I don't pick the real recent trades, because it's too easy to figure out who the seller is. So.
Right,
yeah,
it, this is weird because, well, it's not this one because that was a three-peat. In the previous, this wasn't the previous offseason or trade deadlines, but that's when they, the three-team trade with Detroit and New York, where Detroit got Scherzer, which would have made Arizona a seller at that point. So
okay.
That's
mm-hmm.
why I want to say they are a seller in this situation.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, good. You are correct. Arizona is the
okay.
seller.
Arizona is.
Okay.
Okay. I love it because it's Arizona seller. It's like, really doesn't narrow it down.
Yeah. So, yeah, let me kind of talk you guys through a little bit of this to help you out. So, yeah, so Arizona is the seller, and there are multiple pieces coming back to Arizona. So it's Arizona sending one piece to the other team that's involved in this, and multiple pieces coming back, which is pretty standard. I don't know what else, how much of a hint you guys want. I don't think you guys are, like, on the cusp of this. So I'll give you a
not
hint.
Yet.
The guy who is leaving the Diamondbacks is a pitcher. So it's a pitcher. That's the big centerpiece of this trade. Interestingly, everything that came back was also pitchers, most of whom you would recognize. So I've got four people here who you need to identify, and a fifth one that I'm going to give you guys a pass on because I don't know why you've ever heard of this guy. But I need you to identify four people, so we got some work to do here. So that's why I'm kind of giving you a big hint, telling you they're all pitchers. So can you figure out who the centerpiece was? Because if you can figure that out, who was the centerpiece and where did he go when he left Arizona, I think we can work through the rest of it, even if we got to do a couple hints. So any guesses, any thoughts, any questions that I can answer for you to give you a smaller hint to help you on your way? Perhaps about the team where this person was headed, if I might suggest a path to take.
Oh, man. 2010.
They sent
who are the other contenders in 2010?
That's...
May I
I'm
give
going
you a suggestion?
ML. Was it,
May I
yes.
give you a suggestion? I don't think that you should focus on the people who were the top contenders.
Oh. Well, that opens up half the league.
Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that the team didn't think that they were a contender. But, in fact,
who did Seattle trade?
In third place in their division the year in which they made this trade. So, something to think about.
So
they
this,
finished
this
under
team
500.
Received a, oh, dang. So they got themselves a
I
pitcher.
I mean, if you think about it in terms of history, I think you can figure out who it was. Because this is somebody
well,
who does
like,
things like this.
And it was a starting pitcher?
It was a starting pitcher, yes.
And it went over to the other league, to the American League?
It did go to the American League, yes.
Okay, so okay. It's got to be the Mariners or the Angels, right?
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I was going to say, that's why I was like, okay, like, who does stuff like this? You pick
oh,
a team, there's only two.
I got it.
You got a 50-50 shot, and you got both.
I got it.
So I think you know.
I'm guessing it's the Angels.
Now that. Yes, it is the Angels. Irby knows who the pitcher is too, don't you?
I can think of, I know who the big piece going, and I can think of two of the guys going back, because one of them still pitches in the majors, but not for the team.
Correct. Correct.
So.
Oh, yeah, he's got it. He knows. All right. All right, Irby, go ahead. Well, tell the people the big pieces. That's probably the first one people are going to get. So we'll talk through the other half of it a little bit.
Yeah, the Angels of Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim thought that acquiring Dan Herron would make the difference. In response, they gave away Patrick Corbin.
Mm-hmm. That's one of them.
And it wasn't at the time, but Tyler Skaggs was involved in that trade, correct?
That is correct, yes. Tyler Skaggs was traded to Arizona. He would later be traded back to the Angels in that three-team deal that involved Trumbo and Adam Eaton.
Yep.
Ultimately, of course, then he goes out for TJ for 3 years and then dies. Very sad. But, yeah, so Dan Herron, Patrick Corbin, Tyler Skaggs. There's one more guy involved in this that I think you know who he is, and then there's one nobody. I'll give you the nobody if you can hit the other one, and I'll give you a hint if you can't because I think you'll get there.
All pitchers.
Well, here, while he's mulling this over, guys, just so you know, this is just a heads up if you don't know this already. Skaggs and Corbin were both minor leaguers. They were both prospects when this trade happened. Corbin makes his debut in 2012. Skaggs doesn't come along to the majors until much later, and he's out with Tommy John for a long time before he kind of makes his second comeback with the Angels. And Corbin, of course, ultimately goes on to be a member of the Washington. Two other dudes involved in this trade.
The other person we should know, was it also a minor leaguer?
No, this was a major league piece that came back. So this would have been a starting pitcher for the Angels and a major leaguer
at the time. Oh, Joe Saunders.
There you go. Yeah, buddy. Good job. So,
I have not thought of Joe Saunders in a long time. The other two,
Joe Saunders.
I knew the Skaggs, I knew that one just because of it was, not immediately, but traded back. That one always stuck for that. Corbin was the prospect piece. What could this guy be? And then Joe Saunders was the, can you please take him off our hands?
I'm right there with you. What I remembered about this trade was Corbin and Skaggs, mostly because they were fools to give up Corbin, and Skaggs we all remember because of the trade back, and then in fact he died. But I didn't remember that Saunders was involved in this at all. And then he is, of course, by the way, traded again at the next deadline for reliever Matt Lindstrom to the Orioles. So Saunders, let's see. I'm going to stay there.
Saunders almost ended his career as a Ranger. Didn't he have a year with us?
No. He did spend a year with you. Actually, spent a year. He went to Baltimore, Seattle, Texas, back to Baltimore, and then retired in 2014. So those are all one-year deals. So things didn't go so hot for him after this trade. Obviously, things really didn't go so hot for Tyler Skaggs. Patrick Corbin did fine. Dan Herron, he moved around a lot. I mean, he was with the Cardinals originally, and then he was traded to the A's, and he signed with Arizona in 2008, and he goes to the Angels. He stays there until 2012. By the way, this trade did them no good. They finished third in 2010. They finished second in 2011 and third again in 2012. After that, then he goes on to play for Washington, the Dodgers, Miami, and the Cubs before retiring in 2015. So they gave up all of that. And I guess really they gave up Corbin for the second and third place finishes. So, Irby, do you want to take a flyer at the last guy or not? I can't imagine why you would remember this person. He pitched in three major league games. so I
no, I could be here a while.
Probably not. Yeah, we'll be here all night. I have never heard of him. If anybody would, it would be you. But this was relief pitcher Rafael Rodriguez, who played two games and then got DFA'd and then played one game for someone else and then retired. So that was the final piece of the puzzle. I don't think anybody's too broken up about that. But
nope.
Good job, Irby. You really nailed this one. You got this quick, too. So.
It's because the hint that you gave. Not that it gave too much away, but it's just because an Angels team that thought they were still in the race, in that American League West race. But I didn't realize they finished under 500 that year. So Angels.
Well,
them.
I knew if I said like they do this all the time that you would know. I was like, well, he'll be able to knock it down to Angels and Mariners, and then you just flip a coin and guess like which one of them didn't understand where they were really at. I mean, he slotted into a rotation with Jared Weaver, Irvin Santana, Joel Piñeiro, and they still finished in third because they are the Angels and they don't know how this baseball stuff works. So, but yeah, good job.
But that that's at a time, too, when they were – wasn't their outfield, like, all at the – it was Torrey Hunter, Bobby Abreu, and wasn't Matsui on the team at that time? I guess he would have been DH and not an outfield. Like, that was at the time – I mean, it was just – but that was the Angels. And, like, how old can we possibly get?
Well, is all – I mean, keep in mind, like, if you're just thinking of these players in general, that this was, like, back end – regressing Torrey Hunter, Bobby Abreu. This is not like peak Torrey Hunter on the Twins or peak Bobby Abreu, wherever the hell Bobby Abreu was when we're speaking. Not Anaheim, not the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California, California, Orange County, Los Angeles, Anaheim.
I'm now looking at that team.
I think that was that phase, wasn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm now looking at that team. 33-year-old Fernando Rodney on this.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Of course Fernando Rodney was there. Like, we could play – I bet we could go through a whole season of Let's Remember Some Trades where we only use trades, which Fernando Rodney was a member of the roster of one of the teams involved in the trade, and I bet we can go a year because he has been everywhere for so long. We would just never run out. Except then you would all have to think about Fernando Rodney, and I like you guys too much to make you do that. So I'm not going to change the season up for that.
I just love that he was 33 in 2010.
I know. How old? Wow. That's amazing. Because Dan Heron would have been 30. Joe Saunders would have been 29, I think.
Both of them are 29. Yeah, both 29. Jared Weaver and Irvin Santana, 27. Scott Kazmir, 26. I mean, it looked great. It looked great on paper.
Did it, though? Did it?
Maybe this is why they never make moves with pitchers. They blew up in their face, and they just stopped.
Their source of their power was gone. Vladimir Guerrero was the DH. Mm-hmm. That was all their power.
No, they got Bobby Abreu.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great trade. Taking us back to 2010. And it's a nice little note for Angels fans out there. Your team hasn't changed. Oh, all right. That's going to do it for us. We're out of here. Until next week, watch some baseball.